Welcome to the first episode of The Brainstorm in 2026, episode 115, for those of you counting along at home. This week, we've got everything AI, two acquisitions or fake acquisitions. We'll dive into that. We've got Manus going to Meta, and we had Grok NVIDIA announcement. And then everyone is saying that Claude's Opus 4.5 is AGI. So we'll dive into that. Brett, why don't you start us off here with whichever of the licensing deals, stripping talent, leaving company standing you want.
Let's start with Grok. Grok with a Q instead of Grok with a K. So Grok is a, people would call it an ASIC company. It's a specialized AI chip company. Approaching the world in a similar way to Cerebras, where they were placing a bet on the idea that being able to produce tokens more quickly, even if you're taking on limitations in terms of the kinds of models you can run, is a way to penetrate the market. And so they and Grok is a investment or a venture strategy. So we believed in that thesis that kind of speed of inference was going to be net better. NVIDIA dropped $20 billion on Grok to not acquire it, not even exclusively like to license its technology, but to hire a few people, including its CEO, and non-exclusively license its technology. And this is a similar quasi-acquisition strategy as was used on Windsurf, which was an AI coding company that also got vacuumed up. And the idea is you non-exclusively license a technology and you hire the key talent in, and so they develop it just for your purposes. So nobody else is going to actually kind of use the IP, but you don't run the risk of regulators saying this acquisition is not allowed. Seemingly the shareholders in Grok and the employees are going to get paid out. I think it's most interesting from a what is NVIDIA doing here perspective, where the concern about Grok and these other companies is, well, yes, they have like things that are a slightly different flavor of chips that maybe they can carve out a market niche, but NVIDIA is occupying the spot where they see all the workloads and they can just, if this looks like a useful approach to delivering AI chips, they can catch up effectively. And Grok basically was attaching memory on chip, so you can have the entire model loaded really on chip and therefore do inference very quickly. And the speculation is actually particularly given some of the bandwidth or the high bandwidth memory constraints, which is what NVIDIA is relying on, actually that architecture becomes important to running these models. And so NVIDIA swooped in and paid $20 billion, of which they are generating much more than that in free cash flow annually, to acquire in this Grok technology and secure their competitive roadmap.
So what do you think that, you know, Cerebras was going to go public, wasn't going to go public? Now,
well, now according to Polymarket, they definitely
might go public.
Yeah,
right.
It was like a 50-50 shot for this year, but now it's an 80% chance according to the Polymarket contract on thin volume. But I think people are recognizing, one, that maybe just, you know, grabbing onto like a slightly different inference architecture could be important here. Frankly, I don't know that we know for sure what NVIDIA's motivations are here. They could have been acquiring Grok to make sure that a competitive hyperscaler didn't acquire it and therefore get like an orthogonal vector on them. There's a lot of pointing to, again, this high bandwidth memory market that has exploded and that is, rumored to be restricting the ability to produce the frontier model type chips, TPUs, and NVIDIA's next generation chips. And so it could be that they actually need this alternative path to navigate around some supply constraints that they have. I think we'll see the degree to which this technology is embedded in NVIDIA's immediate term roadmap versus kind of like it's more medium term play. And I think it's clear that the chip space is continuing to heat up. And then from a very, very high level, I think you can say that we have so much demand for compute. Elon's betting that there's basically effectively infinite demand, or that the demand elasticity curve just keeps going out and going out and going out. And with that context, then you look forward a few years and you look at anything that becomes the choke point to producing flops for these models, and you say, oh, I have to navigate around that choke point. And so NVIDIA maybe is taking the same perspective and saying, hey, this is a choke point on our current architecture, so we need an alternative way to serve inference tokens. And these guys have something that's proven to work, albeit on smaller models, and we can use it and incorporate it. We'll see.
All right. So then before we move to the software acquisition, it's safe to say that you think 2026, the mismatch of supply and demand for chips blows out even further.
Yes. I think that have you heard of Baumol's?
Cost disease. Yeah.
Right. And I think the best way to think about this is like Opera just gets more and more expensive. There's not more demand for Opera necessarily, but as everything else gets cheap, as t-shirts get cheap, the thing that remains scarce, because we produce t-shirts in Vietnam or wherever, you know, and so their cost continues to fall, or TVs get cheap, anything that isn't, you know, getting more productive becomes a bigger, more expensive per unit, because like same amount of money and you can only buy so many TVs, and so then you have extra money and you have to spend it on something, so you spend on the thing that is essentially supply scarce. And we're not producing that many more opera singers or opera houses, but they're still kind of like, and so the opera tickets go up. And in chip space, I think that wherever the choke point is will suddenly become very expensive. And so the game of producing kind of compute for AI is figuring out where those choke points are and then figuring out ways to creatively maneuver around them. And so energy was the choke point of the year and probably will be the choke point of the year to come, where people are accepting deliveries from NVIDIA chips because they kind of want to reserve their spot in line for that potential choke point, even though they can't yet deploy them because they're trying to motivate the power to actually turn them on. Well, Elon's move is to say, well, I figured out a way around this the energy constraint, but you just have to have an orbital class reusable rocket in order to exploit it. And so I think that, that's why that's an important vector. It's not for this year or next year, but kind of 28, 29. That's his way to navigate around it. And along the way, I think you're going to hit these bumps where you're like, oh gosh, now this is where the market is concentrated and there's a choke point that we need to unlock.
All right, Nick, take us to the software side and the drama that Jan LeCun is stirring up at
Meta. Yeah. Lots going on. Feels like we've been gone forever and nothing has changed, but at the same time, everything has changed in these past 2 weeks.
AGI happened, yeah.
Maybe it will never, according to Jan LeCun. But so Meta has acquired Manus AI for a reported north of $2 billion figure. This is a real acquisition. This is an all-cash deal. All equity holders get paid out. The team comes on. Manus stays operating as is. I think if you go to their website right now, it says Manus AI, accompanied by Meta, which is their brand now. But interesting here, Manus is an orchestration layer. So they don't own or create any of their own foundation models. Actually, the core brain of this product, this agentic product, is actually Claude. Claude, and then there's some fine tuning and interworking with Alibaba's Qwen models and a few others. It's not exactly out there as to how they're doing this, but it's an orchestration layer. So you can think that they're using different models for different purposes, all to be able to deliver an agentic experience. So their whole prompt is, or their idea is that, when you prompt, you receive a chat-like answer back. This is you receive an outcome, right? I actually used it over the holiday break to build an email notification system to deliver news to my inbox. It actually worked. That was the first time I was actually able to make something production. So that was cool. But I think that is the story here. And I think, why is Meta doing this? Well, that is a great question. You know, this is more of an enterprising leaning software. It's used mostly by businesses. It was actually the first company or the fastest company to reach 100 million ARR. I mean, that changes every other week, but they're currently number one. I think it was only a few months. But it looks like, you know, maybe Meta is saying, hey, maybe there is going to be a needed orchestration layer. And then, you know, Sam, you were talking about this in the pre-show, but, you know, that this idea that there's going to be one foundation model that solves all problems, maybe that's not how this landscape shapes up. And you need this orchestration layer to be able to fit and plug and play all of these different models to actually deliver this next phase of growth within AI, which everyone points to being agentic, which is Manus's whole pitch, right? You put in an idea and you get an outcome and product on the other side. And that so far has only been able to be done with tools that use multiple models. I mean, we can get into Claude, they may have figured out AGI, but that's where we are today. So Manus is now fully owned, they kicked all Chinese. Well,
isn't there an alternative interpretation here, which is that Mark Zuckerberg paid tens of billions of dollars to hire Alexander Wang to drive his artificial superintelligence unit, and then Alexander Wang, one, totally pissed off Jan LeCun, and then two, faked the results of Llama 4, even internally. And so Zuckerberg's like, oh gosh, like I've basically destroyed the internal morale of my team, put this guy in charge of the org who is relatively green and had blitzscaled a kind of slop AI labeling company to an obscene valuation based on top line rather than actual, you know, gross profitability. And now I need to save this by bringing in better, more actual true talent to try to preserve kind of this huge burning hole of capital on my balance sheet.
Yeah, I think you could look at it as a talent grab. I think there's a lot of drama to unpack in your statement there. And if you're in the Jan LeCun camp who has left Meta, he was running, call it the science division behind their AI ambitions. And he has been notorious from day one, since, or not day one, 3 years ago when all of this started, when ChatGPT first launched. He's been on the side of large language models will not result in ASI or AGI. They just fundamentally, that's not how they're set up. That's not how they work. Their prediction models to predict the next token that best fits your ask. And he has been on that train from the beginning. And so the idea was they were bringing in Alexander Wang to run the LLM division of the company, and Jan LeCun would remain building out these other systems that might result into what he believes is AGI, which is more physics world-based models, which he's now left Meta, right? So you've hinted at there is a rift. Alexander Wang pissed off Jan LeCun. Jan LeCun left. He's now raising 500 whatever the figure is, $500 million, $1 billion, to run his own foundation model company in the hopes that he can bring about AGI. Meta's an investor, but he's also on the circuit of raising capital. So he has to point to, well, what they're doing is no good. What I'm doing is much better. So I think the drama is warranted to a degree, there is reason to still be skeptical about Meta's ambitions here, right? Like they don't have a frontier model. They're definitely behind the eight ball. Alexander Wang is very young and, as Lan LeCun would say, inexperienced. But I think, you know, you can look at the Manus and say, well, they're bringing in talent, or are they looking to get into a different part of the AI stack, which is like that orchestration layer, and then use that to then deliver, you know, maybe they replace Claude with Llama. Who knows? I was actually surprised by, you know, and still am trying to understand the strategic relevance of Manus and given what Meta does.
Well, I feel like Jan LeCun was more concerned with being right than making money. Alexander Wang was more concerned with making money than being right. And so clearly those are two ends of the spectrum.
But you can also believe, like, so just to distill it again, Jan LeCun's belief is that because you're taking a sentence and you're filling in the next token, the next token, the next token, the further away you get from the root truth, like the whatever error rate you have compounds. And so you get farther and farther from reality. And so his whole point is like, well, so you can never, you, it's basically like a snake eating its own tail. You can't build a snake eating its own tail all the way to, I mean, to mix metaphors, to the moon or something, you know. And so he's saying, like, you can't get artificial general intelligence by, you know, that style. And the counter argument would be, but if you can, if you have some way to verifiably kind of error correct, as in you generate a token and then you check back and say, yes, this token is demonstrably right, then you are actually appending something that does, that has a zero error rate. And so the, I think with Claude, you know, it's at least gotten good enough at error correcting along the way. Same with ChatGPT, same with Gemini, same with Grok, where these are producing useful work. I don't know how you define artificial general intelligence, like, but it's very clear that people are using ChatGPT Pro to like actually pierce the intellectual frontier in formal mathematical logic and to like, you know, prove out, you know, mathematical theorems that previously weren't being proven out. And that is like, you know, at the most abstract level, a demonstration that maybe it's just a stochastic parrot, but it's a stochastic parrot that's saying, you know, useful things to humanity. And is there some, like, I think getting, doing underlying physics and breaking through as to what's going on in the universe probably requires, in fact, it certainly requires empirical results. You can't just do it by reading a physics textbook and extrapolating, but that's like not necessarily kind of a commercially valid criticism of these systems as they currently exist. So I think you can both kind of believe what Jan LeCun's saying philosophically. You can also say he's been pretty profoundly disproven just practically in the space that they're operating in and being useful. And you can also look at kind of the, at least the claims he made about effectively faking Llama 4's results on some benchmarks by kind of fine tuning the model against the benchmark and think that there's maybe a fair amount of challenge and frankly rot in this artificial superintelligence unit that Zuck has pushed into the org and then kind of like really distorted the compensation structure of everybody inside the org around in a way that could result in, you know, people looking at other things and kind of like stabbing each other in the back and everything that happens when a pivot goes wrong. So that's kind of where I think things are.
But then I want to talk the point I brought up. It was the wrapper or the app versus the model. And so recently, you know, and this will tie into the next topic of Claude Opus 4.5, but I've been playing with Garrett Scott, who he runs Pipe Dream Labs, which is a cool company trying to do tunnel delivery in Austin. And this is his side project. And it's essentially using Claude and attaching to it a password manager, email account, a phone number, whatever. And so it's like, this is full on Turing test, where it's like, it's getting to the point where I don't think someone would know whether it's me or a bot online, right? So it's like, is it artificial general intelligence? I don't know, but it's like a digital agent that passes as a human using a computer. And that's, wow, that's super powerful. But then I was thinking about it, and it's like, you know, a computer is also super powerful. And it's like, you need apps on a computer, because if you just gave someone a computer, the average person can't do anything. It's like the analogy I drew is like to maps back throughout history, where it's like you have kingdoms spending tons of money, sending out expeditions to further, quote, world knowledge. Right. And it's like you gather it and you collect and you connect all of the dots and you're like, I have a map of the world. And it's like, wow, that's extremely useful to a certain set of people. But if you get the average,
the map was a byproduct of the gold they were trying to find. I don't think that they were like, "Hey, go out there and find maps." They were like, "Find us some gold in the new world," and that's
yeah. The gold, is the AGI, right? But it's like you need, right? It's like you give a person a map; it's extremely useful for them to find gold, whatever. But it's like, you know, give them a train ticket, and you get far more people going west than if you gave them a map. I think it's the same thing with AI. And it's like, sure, give someone a ability to generate the wildest things possible with the point and click of a button. And it's like the average person is like, whoa, but they can't actually do anything with it. I think the world is going to need far more handholding than these models allow. And it's like when I look at the competition, it's like the models are becoming interchangeable to a greater and greater extent. And so it's like maybe okay. One of these model,
your contention is like Manus or Do Anything shows that the underlying model doesn't really matter because those guys can basically create this agentic wrapper that sits on top of it. And that's inexpensive to do because you haven't had to spend however many billion dollars creating the underlying pre-trained model. And you can just query by API kind of whichever model you need. And those are going to become net user sticky, as in the world is going to be like, hey, I'm just going to use Manus because it's a wrapper that's for me.
Right. There's one more level of abstraction, because it's like even those wrappers are still too blank canvas. And it's like,
I think, Sam, you're coming at it more from like, what will the consumer end up choosing? Not what is like, you know, the best product a company can put out. Because maybe the analogy that I use in my head is you hand everyone in the world a blank sheet of paper and a pen and you say, draw me a picture. 99% of those pictures are going to be stick figures, they're going to be terrible, useless, thrown in trash. That's kind of the majority of prompting. But if you were to give someone a coloring book and say, just draw inside the lines, people will make, you know, beautifully colored drawing books. And so I think of this as more like you hand someone and say, this is the tool you use for X, Y, and Z, and they'll use it for X, Y, and Z. You hand them ChatGPT, and 30% of the queries are, write this better. Like, people don't have enough imagination to even begin to prompt in a useful way for the majority of people. So I think what you're saying, Sam, is when you hand deliver them something that says, well, you prompt this for this reason and this reason only, it makes it much easier for the consumer to grasp the technological advancements that we're seeing. And I agree.
Right. And to appease Brett to some extent here, I'm not saying that means look, he's already defensive.
Man, you're starting to get in my world.
You're presuming the take I'm going to have.
All I'm saying is that doesn't mean that the LLM companies today are in a bad position, right? Obviously, they're in an extremely powerful position. They have the most insane level of distribution and attention out there. And, right, we all know attention is all you need. So it's like the question is, at some point, though, they need to stop. It's very hard to push the frontier and build for the consumer. And so it's like, as long as your gun's blazing on pushing the frontier, you're just leaving a huge, you're forging the path for everyone else to come in behind and say, okay, let's build something that's actually useful to the consumer.
Well, ChatGPT, I think that's where it, like, they have that distribution because they are in some ways building something that's useful to people and being guided by the things that people are using. And I think that in some ways I agree with you, as in the wrapper is more important than the underlying model. But all of these kind of reasoning systems, the chain of thought systems, are wrappers built on top of an underlying model. And what gives you the raw fuel you need to build the best wrapper? Well, you need to have, I think, access to the underlying model. And then there's a further step, which is kind of, and that was, you know, Gemini, what Google did is they demonstrated, actually, you can generate better pre-trained models if you're smart about it. So there is still the ability to improve those underlying pre-trained models, which then gives you option value to deliver better chain of thought reasoning on top of it, which then gives you option value to be like, oh, and here is the, you know, agent that will do your email And I think that it's likely that just, I think the computer analogy is useful. I can't remember who said it. It might have been Aaron Levy of Box, but or maybe Steve Sinofsky, but pointed out that, I think it was Steve Sinofsky, who's an early Microsoft guy, pointed out that when kind of apps or applications, they weren't called apps then, were being developed on top of computers, on top of the graphical user interfaces, people were saying, oh, those apps are, they're just thin skins. All the hard work is being done by the operating system. The people, person who developed that app didn't have to, you know, figure out how to do kind of like the mouse inputs to the you know, all of the stuff the operating system was doing for the app application was considered all of the hard work, and everything on the application, anybody could do it. And so therefore it was not like a useful economic spot to occupy because somebody would just duplicate that function because it was very easy to code an application. And as it turns out, yes, the operating system was super economically valuable, and certain applications were also independently super economically valuable. And some of those applications, because of the synergy between the operating system and applications, lived with the operating system developer, the Microsoft Office product suite. You know, they could develop that because of their control of the underlying operating system. And so they could box out Lotus and, you know, acquire in some of the technology they needed for PowerPoint. And so I think that's exactly where we're going to be, where there are these super valuable.
It could go anywhere.
No. That I think the underlying operating systems, which I'm defining here as the foundation models, are going to capture probably the majority or plurality value in the value chain. And there will be massively valuable companies that somehow carve out I'm just developing an application on top of this that turns out to be the right angle usefulness to kind of live there. And it's, you know, maybe able to work across multiple models, but it'll work slightly differently across the multiple models. And so, and I think that the evidence you have to look at is, you know, who are people, what are people using now and how much are they engaging with it? And that gives at least the operating system developers here, I'm thinking Grok, OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google, the information they need to figure out kind of how to serve those users. And so that just is an advantage, but not necessarily a dispositive advantage over kind of occupying one of the useful economic slots. And one last thing is I do think that there's the potential that being able to train these things full stack actually results in just more performance. So kind of like owning the underlying pre-trained model and then the chain of thought thing and even the end application allows you to do stuff on the kind of R&D side that just makes it more performant. And so over time, more of it gets absorbed into the bottom layer, but that may not come true. I think that's likely.
But even just taking one step back, if we go to our last episode and the last 3 weeks of December, it was Gemini versus ChatGPT. Everyone's blown away by Gemini. People are saying, oh, I no longer use ChatGPT, I use Gemini. You then using ChatGPT to scrape lots of data to show that, just kidding, actually people are still using ChatGPT. And now 3 weeks later, everyone is on Claude Opus 4.5. This is the best thing ever. Haven't heard anyone mention Gemini since 2025.
In weeks. Yes.
Since 2025.
In all of 2026, it's been
right.
All
it's like
Claude.
That's yes. Okay. That is a interesting dynamic slash that's a highly competitive environment to be operating in.
But it depends. It's competitive, but in a very small circle, right? Because I agree with, I think, both sides, which is, yeah, you should see continued pricing pressure on the operating system level. So on Claude, on Gemini, on ChatGPT, but there's only a few. And my guess is there will be even less in a few years. But I do agree because any company you talk to, at least that I've talked to, that's building on top of or using one of these models on the back end, every company says, we've set our system up so that it's plug and play, so that if Claude comes out tomorrow and is better than Gemini, we can immediately switch, and you really shouldn't see that much of a performance difference. If anything, it should only get better because we're now using the frontier model. And that is,
but that's why the API business, I feel like, is a much harder. I think it's a more competitive. Whereas at the consumer facing layer, you know, it's different. And like Claude, people are specifically talking about not Opus 4.5, but Claude Code, which is like a good kind of, it's packaged well in a way specifically for developers to do complex big projects and have it just do it for them relatively successfully. And you should be careful because I think at every stage along the way, the things people have been claiming these systems are capable of is like one step further than actually if you use them, they are capable of. And so it's kind of, and or for even the person who is ambitiously using them, but not using them 100% of the time, like you can't wring as much performance out of them. And so people maybe are getting that performance, but for the kind of, you know, average user, not as much, and that's an aspirational performance goal. But each kind of like this is overhyped step has then been achieved within, you know, 6 months or a year and accessible to broad users. So I think you should continue to see that happen.
One last question that will bring us full circle, almost full circle. What if Meta's plan here with Manus is to bring that same API business model dynamic to the consumer landscape? As in, they look at Manus and they go, hey, what if we're able to build this orchestration layer on top of a consumer facing product and plug and play the best model that fits the need of the consumer's prompt? And maybe part of it will be Llama, but maybe they're not going to spend as much on CapEx anymore because they're going to say, well, we're going to build frontier models, but for this specific use case, not general purpose, and go after, you know, Gemini and ChatGPT and Claude. And maybe that's their ultimate goal because they were always open source from the start. Then now there's rumors they're going closed. Maybe this is going back to not open source, but open model, as in they're completely indifferent into what model delivers the best, you know, experience for the consumer. And the reason that they could get away with doing this is because they have the distribution. Because if they put this in front of the 3.5 billion people that use their product, they immediately eclipse on a user basis, if it catches on, everyone else. Is that possible?
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. I mean,
Better question here. Does the chat box remain the user interface over the next 4 years?
No, I mean, almost. Well,
It's hard to see how it.
I think you have to like there's going to be more clarity around segmentation. As in, there are rumors that for its hardware device, OpenAI is redoing its audio model. Right. And that would be independently useful from whether or not the hardware device works. As in, I think the voice models are a different experience in user interface. They're actually arguably more sticky than anything else because there's a personality attached to the voice. Literally, the model is its own spokesperson and you develop a relationship with it. And all of the thorny kind of romantic entanglements and stuff, I think, will go through voice vector first. And so the developing into that direction, I think, is probably the more productive consumer direction, or it's a way that you will create a really, really sticky consumer base that I can't imagine that the consumer side is going to live in the text box for the, you know, people are doing text chatting conversations with ChatGPT 4.0 that they love its personality. Well, you know, that's a cry for that personality to be turned into an audio, like spoken relationship, which is then going to become a video interactive relationship. I think that's where kind of that side of the world goes. Whereas the, you know, for knowledge work and core kind of like idea building and building things in the world, I think you need to have like a text interface. And so I think the enterprise side will stay there. Look at Claude Code is like pure text. It's good. It operates best in kind of like the terminal window rather than using a GUI or anything. And so it really is kind of like going into core knowledge work. And I think that's, those are the two ends of a spectrum of the way things are going to develop.
Additional, I agree. I think if you look at the numbers now, voice as a percentage of total search, like think of traditional Google search, it's like in the low single digits. I think there's reason to believe it will be higher double digits, maybe 20, 30% of total prompt volume, primarily because if you look at the amount of text in a traditional search versus a new age chatbot prompt, it's like almost 3x larger, as in you're prompting with more words than you were ever searching in Google's, because you need to give more context to get a better answer. And for that simple reason, you'll end up deferring to speaking because it's easier to speak than it is to, you know, write or, you know, type 14 words. So I agree with you, Brett. I think voice will be not a majority. I think text will still be a majority of consumer interactions because of privacy, because you're on the go, mobile. We can't just all be walking around like schizophrenics. But at home, I think voice will, you'll end up doing the majority of your prompting via voice at home.
I think, okay, so then this is the new hardware. We're going to, like, instead of having the AirPods sit up here, somebody's going to develop something that looks like that kooky Dyson helmet that, like, covers your mouth.
There's
so
already,
can't
solutions.
See that you're speaking.
The sub-vocalization things are...
Still stand by like a bone conducting or something that doesn't sit necessarily. Like if you ever use Shocks with a Z, those headphones that sit and then they have the microphone pointed in your ear, or the Meta glasses do the same thing. I think that with the forward facing camera is the device of the future. Like one of those old school Bluetooth headset that had a cam. Like if you were to just put a camera on that, I think that's the next wearable device. A pen, I don't know what they're doing over there.
Separately, Shocks, incredible. What a wave. It's like, I feel like they were hot a while ago and they've totally resurfaced successfully in the athletic.
They're the first pair of, first pair of Bluetooth headsets that actually works. I've been using them for a month. I haven't had to charge them once. And they always both connect. It's amazing.
Well, it's because it's one thing, right? Separate ones?
They're separate.
Gotcha.
You all could well have just totally invented a thing just to make me look sillier.
It's like anyone who works out, they're going Shocks.
I just wear these. What's wrong with these?
Cannot handle sweat.
Then one never connects, and then one never charges. For me, it's
all right. Let's go to the ledger. Okay, Polymarket here. IPOs before 2027. I'm going to go down the list and then I'll give you the percent and we're just going rapid fire. We'll start with Brett and you guys say yes or no, then Nick, and we'll flip back and forth between who's starting. All right.
Okay.
Once Upon a Farm. I never even heard of this company. 88% chance it goes public.
I don't take a position.
All right, we'll go to the...
We have to do companies we know.
Cerebras, 80%.
They tried, right? And then pulled back their S1.
I'm going to go yes. You got to hit the window. This is up from like 50% before this Grok acquisition, but I think that all the competitive players are sitting there and saying, actually, sorry, I'm changing my mind. I'm going no. No, because there's a more than 20% chance that somebody swoops in and acquires them before they IPO.
Are we going to go down this entire list? Can I just pick a long shot that I think would be?
Sure.
Yeah.
I like the idea that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are both sitting at roughly 30%. I'll take those odds. Not tech related at all, but would be interesting.
All right. We're going to hold you to that. I want to hit one more. Okay. And that we're all going to vote on. Anthropic at 50% chance, at least as of this morning, to IPO in 27.
Yes. Can I give my reasoning?
Yeah.
So the reasoning I saw, and this is not my take, I read it on X, and I thought it was a great understanding of why going public.
I thought you weren't on X. Did you read it on Threads?
Nick is back. X. Nick admitted Elon fixed X.
No. He's now ruined it with the long articles, and they take up my entire timeline. No, it's a love-hate relationship. You've always known this. But okay. I think the reason to believe that Anthropic will go public, and this is a good message to all companies thinking about going public, especially if you're in the enterprise space, it's actually extremely valuable to have your finances as a private company in going public audited in the process. It actually helps you, and this is a take I saw on X, be able to sell into larger Fortune 500 companies because, you know, the decision maker at that company doesn't have to say, hey, we're taking a long shot bet on this private company. They can say, no, this is also a public company. And I think that is extremely valuable, especially as you're, you know, growing larger and larger, and you're now a public company, you actually might have some leverage over private counterparts because, you know, people want to feel comfortable in the decision they've made when they decide to spend, you know, $100 million on Anthropic APIs. Going public actually can help that decision. So that's why I think 50% makes...
Well, my take on this whole market is you've got some very big names with extremely high percentages, which if I'm a betting man, if the biggest one, it's like, so what's at the top of the list here? You've got Cerebras, SpaceX, and then you got to jump to the 50% where it's like Discord, Anthropic, Anduril, Databricks, yada, yada, yada. I think it's like if SpaceX goes and is successful, the window's open, all of these odds are jumping up 20% regardless. It's like the window's either open or it's not. And so it's like, I think SpaceX is now the gorilla, elephant, whatever you want in the room, where it's like people are just going to look to see if that happens, and if so, then it's like, okay, run for the door.
I also believe that one, I think I've drawn this analogy before, us being at like mid 1995 internet space. Now, as we move into 2026, I think we're more in like the 97 space.
Well, it's like dog years, AI years.
If you look at that cycle, at the peak, you had more like basically an IPO a day in the US. I think we're going to hit this period where, one, the real meaningful companies are going to IPO, and that's going to like rip open the window. And then you're going to get this flood of people trying to hit the market where it's, you know, Wall Street loves to say, this is a zero, this is a zero, this is a zero. Then, oh, this is a one. And then therefore everything else is a 0.5, you know? And, but I think Anthropic is a real company. I think SpaceX is a real company. Obviously they're both in our venture strategy. I think that, the caveat I'd say, Nick, is revealing your financials. Your financials have to be healthy enough that somebody looks at them and says, yes, this is a company that I can trust, which is presumably a precondition to IPO.
Well, of the names you just mentioned, I don't think Anthropic's the one you have to worry about their financials.
Yeah. I think that the other characteristic of this cycle, generally Anthropic, SpaceX, is that there's actually a lot of competition for capital. There was, when Uber came to market, there was this idea that we can out-capitalize everybody. Basically, you know, we will blitz scale by raising more money from anybody else, and then therefore we'll build out the business model and become net sticky on the basis of our just financial capital advantage versus others. But the problem was the capital was being deployed against things that actually, I mean, in Uber's business, it did end up building out the business. But in WeWork's case, it did not, right? And here, actually, there are better uses of capital now than there used to be. As in, kind of, SpaceX is making a big bet on space compute, and that requires a lot of capital to create the infrastructure to do it, to like loft the satellites. They're making a big bet that there's going to be this huge demand for tokens, and so having a marginal advantage at being able to like deploy compute more quickly is going to lead to a lot of advantage for them down the road. Anthropic and OpenAI and XAI and Google are making a big bet that basically deploying capital early against chips to continue to develop these models is going to end up with a return. You just need a huge amount of capital to do that. And when you need a huge amount of capital, you actually have to get into the public markets. You have to get into the public markets, not just for the equity side, but it also makes your debt underwrites easier. So it's not just the business customers looking at your financials. It's also, do you want to lever up this business in some way? It's very, very expensive to do that if you're just like trying to go to a bank to do it. If you can go into the fixed income markets, if you can collateralize it, if you can, you know. So I think that kind of the world, like actually markets are crying to deploy more capital against this space, and people will come public in order to efficiently do that. So yes, I take a yes on Anthropic coming public.
Wait.
And a yes on SpaceX coming public.
Did you just, you went yes, no, yes?
No, or yes, yes.
Which one did you go? Oh, you flipped no.
I went yes, Anthropic, okay. Yes, yeah, SpaceX, yeah. No Cerebras, because I think Cerebras is too 80% chance.
It's small
for
Cerebras. Enough. Yeah.
It's like it could get snapped up by somebody and then you would lose the bet even though it kind of effectively capitalized.
Gotcha. So. Who do you think is the most natural acquirer of Cerebras? Amazon?
I mean, anyone. It could be Intel, could be Amazon, could be, I mean, maybe Google, could be, I'd probably Meta, since they're just buying everything. You know, anybody that has talent, they'll be like, yes, we'll take it. So,
what about not on the list anywhere? Blue Origin. Are they happy just on that money from Bezos? Or do you
wait, you're the reusable rockets expert. Shouldn't you be answering this? What?
Well, yeah, thank you for turning it back. I don't know. I think there is something interesting for them to potentially, if they're going to make a go at this, it seems like you need capital. They've demonstrated some execution, perhaps a turning of capability from doing nothing for decade plus to landing. It seems quite difficult to compete with a SpaceX, but if you were going to do it, I'd imagine you'd want capital. I think
I think Blue Origin's an example of one of those companies that Wall Street says, well, SpaceX is actually a one, therefore Blue Origin is
a 0.5. Right.
And so then, but I mean, what is their revenue base right now?
Nothing.
Nothing. So Blue Origin is the Rivian of reusable rocket manufacturers.
Rivian has revenue and great cars.
I know, but they still
Blue Origin has a reusable rocket, maybe.
Yeah, they have a reusable rocket. It's probably a great rocket. You know, I think that, which means that, I mean, yes, I think
did you say Rivian?
Conditional on SpaceX coming to market for $2 trillion in valuation, people will be like, oh yeah, sure, Blue Origin's worth $75 billion. Sure. Yeah. You know, and it's like, well, are they? I don't know.
$2 trillion on a reported, what, $10 billion in revenue? I really hope this is conjecture.
We will see.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get into Lucid, Rivian next episode and what's going to happen with all of these EV companies. And hopefully, hey, maybe by next episode, there'll be more cybercats out on the road.
Rivian is clearly setting itself up to be acquired by Google. That's my view.
Amazon.
Google.
You're saying for Waymo.
Yeah, for Waymo. Because they say they're going like the LiDAR route for autonomy. They're basically crying out like, please acquire us. You need to get into the automotive manufacturer business right now, please.
Doesn't Amazon own 15% of Rivian?
Yeah, something. But Amazon doesn't actually have a...
They don't have a good... relevant. I mean, they've got Zooks.
Yeah.
But interesting.
Maybe next time.
All right. See everyone next week. A fun first episode.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.